Hey everybody, thanks for coming to another episode of Adventures in Angular. I'm the host, Aaron Frost. I'm with Hero Devs with ng-conf. Today on our panel, we have Traveling Brian.
Hello.
Where you at today?
I'm in Valencia, Spain.
Valencia. Nice.
Valencia. Super nice.
Cool. We have Alyssa Nichol.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
At home?
At home in Missouri. I am MacBookless though, so joining you via mobile.
Via the mobile device. We have the always lurking Shai Resnick.
Lurking in the dark. I'm some dark place here in Israel lurking.
Always lurking.
Always.
And then as our guest, we have everyone's buddy, David East. How's it going, Dave?
And my half-brother.
Half-brother.
I'm not sure any of those things are true, but hey, nice to be here.
At least half of them are true.
At least half of them are true. You got three lies and a truth. You can figure out.
Yeah, pick one.
What it is.
Which one's which? Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Sentry.io. Recently, I came across a great tool for tracking and monitoring problems in my apps. Then I asked them if they wanted to sponsor the show and allow me to share my experience with you. Sentry provides a terrific interface for keeping track of what's going on with my app. It also tracks releases so I can tell if what I deployed makes things better or worse. They give you full stack traces and as much information as possible about the situation when the error occurred to help you track down the errors. Plus, one thing I love, you can customize the context provided by Sentry. So, if you're looking for specific information about the request, you can provide it. It automatically scrubs passwords and secure information, and you can customize the scrubbing as well. Finally, it has a user feedback system built in that you can use to get information from your users. Oh, and I also love that they support open source to the point where they actually open source Sentry if you want to self-host it. Use the code DevChat at Sentry.io to get 2 months free on Sentry's small plan. That's code DevChat at Sentry.io.
So we're going to talk about the competitor of Firebase today.
All right. Yeah. Just list them all.
You don't have any competitors.
I was going to say, is there a competitor?
That's what I was just thinking. I was like, Netlify?
It used to be Parse. Right? Parse was the competitor.
Oh,
Parse.
Man. That's right. Parse is gone, though.
I miss Parse. People didn't know this, but Parse team and Firebase team were actually like, we were friends with each other and same YC class.
What happened? Why is Parse no more?
That you have to go for that one.
Yeah, you gotta go check out the blogs on that one. That was some drama though, yeah?
I don't know. They handled it very well.
Facebook
this is an odd way to start talking about Firebase. I'm pretty sure. Because if I'm listening to this podcast right now, I'm like, all right, I'm here to learn about this Firebase with this David East guy. And then we're starting out like, all right, so here are
let's
the
talk
other,
about the competitors.
Here's wait, I can't use that one? Okay, so that one. Okay. Okay. Right.
People are Googling it. Oh, shoot.
Wait.
Who is this guy, by the way?
Isn't it the Parse episode? If not, I'm out.
Like, Shai didn't sign up for this.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so we're talking about Firebase today.
The Firebase. Yeah. You guys just had a conference in Spain, true?
Yeah, in Madrid.
In Madrid. How'd that go?
I heard good things. So I actually helped organize all the talks and the keynote, but then I don't go to the conference.
Why?
Actually, I had vacation that week. So that I scheduled before they scheduled the conference.
Classic.
So
Madrid wasn't good enough. He's like,
classic
Bahamas.
I was a real American. I went to Washington, D.C.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, nice.
That's what real Americans do.
Yeah, I guess. That's where I'm from. So,
did you do like all the museums and stuff? Or no, since you're from there, you don't do that scene?
So I brought my kids there. So I have a almost 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. And so I brought them to the monuments. And we did like one day, but it's true. Like usually you're from D.C. and someone's like, let's go to the monuments. You're like, oh, no. And you're just like, anything else. But my whole childhood was just basically taking like relatives and then everyone being like, did you know that this insignificant person did this insignificant thing here 100 years ago? And you're like, no, I don't care. And then I found myself walking around for the first time in like 10 years since being there, being like, oh my gosh, did you know that this insignificant person did this insignificant thing 10 years ago? Nice. Both of my kids were just like, oh, where's the bathroom?
Come on, Dad. Come on.
Excellent.
Dad's having a dad moment.
Yeah, I went dad hard.
That's cool. How about the Firebase Summit? Any cool news about it?
It's funny. Whenever we organize content for the keynote, we have like an hour And then when you're launching stuff, depending on how much stuff you get done for the conference, you're like, all right, we're either going to have to stretch this an hour somehow because we launched like one or two things.
We didn't get enough stuff out.
Yeah, we didn't have stuff out or just like, oh, it's going to happen whenever. And this time around, it was like, I was like, I don't know how we're going to get this much stuff done.
Into an hour.
Because we got the sheer, like there are a lot of things that we were just like, oh, and by the way, that happened. But you don't have time. So we just kept moving on. I guess to start off with a bang, the thing that I don't even want to say most excited about because I'm excited about all of it. But one of the things that we did was released a new feature called Firebase Extensions. And so if you've used Cloud Functions before, any type of serverless technology, you're like, hey, I just want to like, you know, I just want to create like a push notification server, or I just want to make payments or something like that. So anything, just 20 lines of node code or whatever. But a lot of times it doesn't end up really being like 20 lines of node code. We like to advertise serverless as like, oh, it's just short, easy.
For easy stuff, yo. It's not for complex. Yeah.
And like sometimes it does work out that way. But then other times, like you got to think about the security model. You got to think about what database you're going to connect to. You got to think about your data structure and all this, you know, fun jazz. And it's for a lot of really common things. And so Firebase Extensions is basically, it's serverless, but without any code at that too. So you go to our UI, and if you want to set up an email server, so like anytime someone saves data in your like Firestore database, we can trigger a like welcome email or like, you know, something like that. Or we can translate text every time it gets saved in the database, and you set that up all through the UI. So you don't actually write any code. You just say like, you know, I want to translate all the reviews of my restaurants. And so here's where that text is located. Every time someone makes a new save, translate run it through this, and then save the output over here. And you just write that in UI, and then we deploy the function. We set up the security model on it and everything. And you don't have to write any code. It just automatically.
Can you edit the code? Does it actually write the code for you as a function and deploy it? And then you can later edit it if you want to? Like,
so you don't edit it directly. So everything is all prepackaged. Right now we only have like 9, I think. We plan rolling out more, and hopefully we have this sort of like developer
SDK type
model.
Thing.
Yeah, that we call it the producer model that we're working on. And so you could create your own. It's all fresh right now.
That's cool.
It's really nice because there's a lot of common things you want to do that you, when you actually think about writing the code, even if it's only going to be like 50 lines, you're like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. Now you don't have to do it. You just click a couple buttons and boom.
Nice. And that's cool. In production today, right?
Yep. Go to firebase.google.com. I think it's like one of the front banners.
Extensions. Cool. Those are called extensions.
Nice. Extensions. Yeah. Extensions. Yes. Nice. Yeah. It's really cool because serverless is really awesome, but this takes it, I don't want to say one step further. That's like a pretty cliche thing to do, but it's like a nice
tool. It's like a nice UI GUI on top of it, right?
Yeah, it's cool because I find myself being able to enable a lot of stuff that I usually don't want to write. And there's also a lot of things out there that are easy to get wrong, or, you know, like, and also debugging in serverless. You're like, oh, got that wrong. Got to redeploy. Oh, wait, no, that fix didn't work. Got to redeploy. That.
Yep.
And so this just, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So what other Cool coolness.
So another thing we did is we had this big sort of, we called internally Firebase for the web. So there is Google Analytics for Firebase, which is like the whole Google Analytics style, you know, suite that you know and love. And then there's this for Firebase twist on it where you can use other Firebase tools in conjunction with Google Analytics to do like really smart things in your app. And so we have a tool or feature called Remote Config, which allows you to store basically like JSON objects, strings, numbers, and stuff like that. And then you pull them on demand with our SDK. And so you can trigger certain things like, hey, show this banner to people in this country, or hey, show this translation if they are from this area. And so you use Google Analytics data to target or create an audience, as it's called, of those situations. And so programmatically, you can enable different parts or different modes of your app. And for the longest time, you could only do these two things with native apps. And so we went and we have a Google Analytics for Firebase SDK for the web. So it works a lot like the Google Analytics SDK you do today. And we works with all like ES modules. So it's, you can, I don't want to say get rid of the GTAG loader, but you don't have to worry about GTAG if you use the SDK. We kind of wrap over that.
Do it for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, can you explain for those of us who don't know what's like GTAG and all that stuff?
Is that one of those things you're like, explain to us who don't know? I know. But for those other people, you know.
No, I know. No,
I know it though. But you are the
I'm part of the people, for all of us, me included, that don't know. That's what I said. Okay. By the way, I'm looking at the show notes. There is a question here. How do we pronounce your name?
Oh, yeah.
Day.
That part of the show notes.
Like Day, yeah. And then Vid. David.
Okay, Day and then Vid. Okay, yeah. So can you, what's the GTAG Day and then Vid?
Google Tag Manager. And so it's like for Google Analytics, allows you to say like, hey, send this event or send that someone did a page view or something like that. Normally, if you're doing GTAG, unless you're like a big advanced GTAG user, you're just including the Google Analytics SDK, and then it's just sort of automatically doing its thing when someone goes to the page. But it allows you to get more custom in there to send events up to Google Analytics.
Nice, thanks.
GTAG is that script you add to get Google Analytics on the page, right?
It's like isogram and then the stuff. Yeah.
That's all the GTAG is.
Sounds like a Google Analytics wrapper. Yeah, GTAG, yo.
Yeah, it's a gangster tag.
But
the OG tag.
Thank you very much for your answer, Dave. Day and then
David.
David. Did we ever get to your beef?
Yeah,
man, we're jumping around like.
Yeah, I was gonna say we're all over the place. Dave, and Alyssa.
You can hold the beef.
Dave, I think now would be a good time to clear the air. Now that we're on the air.
All right.
So let's clear the air, Dave.
Okay. All right. So because this show lacks context in general of I feel like we started a conversation, hit live, and then just sort of ran with it. So before the show turned on, Frosty was like, what are we talking about today? And I was like, I want to talk about Firebase. And he was like, all right, great, let's go with that. But then I also want to talk about something else. And I was like, I'm a little disappointed with you, Frosty. And he was like, save it for live. So he has no idea.
Yeah.
I would say I was disappointed in him.
This is what's known as a risk. I'm taking one. I'm taking a risk. This could be really bad for me.
Yeah, because it's live.
Because it's live, yeah.
Yeah.
So you have that other podcast. What is it? My Angular Story.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
And so you sent out a tweet. I don't know how long it was supposed to go. I mean, it was like 6 months, you know, give or take a few months in that range. And you were like, if anybody's got a great Angular story, let me know. And so I responded to you and I was like, yo, man, ooh, I actually got a pretty good one. And then you were just like, okay.
That's cool. Like, David East guy. I don't know like, this is.
Oh, you have a cool one? That's okay. Cool.
I was like, all right.
Radio silence.
Frosty, yeah. you were emailing me like last week. We were meeting people on my Angular story. What the heck? Not me, apparently. I put myself out there.
He
and I was
checked
like,
your follower count. He was like, bro, no, not enough. Not enough.
Hey, okay. What's your current fax number? I faxed it to you. I faxed you the invite. What's your fax number?
My fax number?
Yeah, do you not have a current fax number? Because I faxed it to you. You didn't get it?
Not current. All right, I mean, that's it. My bad. Right now.
Because Frosty is a bank.
Yeah, my bad. That's right. My bad. I'm going to figure out a different way to get you the invite because I did send it to you.
Yeah, spam. It's called report spam.
Yeah, it was through a fax.
But, listen, we all put Frosty in our spam box sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes when it's bad.
Yeah.
I was very taken aback. I was like, my boy Frosty, I got a great Angular story. And then
what's,
he was just
you,
like,
you know what? What's your Angular story?
No, Dave? No. Save it for Angular story. Let's take a risk. Let's see. It might not be that great. Let's record the episode and see how that is.
That was brutal.
He's talked it up. It's going to be great. Yeah. Oh, dude. Wow. It better be awesome now. Yeah. So everyone listening to this, Dave and I were going to do the Mangler story. Watch for it.
I was the first person to make an Angular 2 app. So, and I was the first person to...
That's it. People are going to tune in to the other podcast.
Well, that's a tease right there.
Yeah.
There's more. Sure. There's
the episode more. Is called totally Wait back. For It.
And we'll never guess what happened next?
Yeah.
No. Because I was the first one. Frosty won't extend the invite.
Via fax. Okay,
I faxed it. I'll send it.
Okay. Let's get back to Firebase.
Yeah, let's talk about Firebase.
I want to talk about Firebase.
So, I think the last time we left off was when I was talking about remote config. So, we brought remote config to the web, which, since that was like 15 minutes ago that I talked about remote config, it is basically it allows you to put in numbers, strings, JSON objects, and then pull that information down to the client and then trigger that information based upon, you know, information about the user, if they fall into a certain audience or not. And you can create your own audiences within Google Analytics, say like, hey, show me only people who are in America and have completed this level of my game. You can create your own custom like events and stuff like that. So you can get really deep and crazy there. And then based upon remote config, you're like, hey, only show me people that beat this level 5. This is only when this one gets triggered or something like that. We brought that down to the web. So you have this SDK that allows you to grab these config values based upon these properties and then do something, you know, dynamic with them. And so like recently what I've been doing is I've been storing like CSS into in remote config and then triggering different themes. And so like, hey, do you prefer dark mode? Like, you know, triggering dark mode and for a user to cross an app. And so like, let's say you have an Android app, an iOS app, and a web app. And then the user says like, hey, I prefer dark mode. You can actually store that preference and actually config their themes all in remote config for all three platforms, because Google Analytics allows you to identify that user, whether they're on the iPhone or, you know, on their iOS app or the web app. It says, hey, this is the same user who was on the iOS app as well as the web app.
So we can kind of store some user preferences up into the Google Cloud through the analytics engine, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just you have like you store a parameter. So you could just be parameter could just be like disable ads, and then it'd be like true or false. And then basically you can set a condition. And so you could say like, hey, for some reason we know that this type of audience hates ads, so we're gonna disable ads or whatever.
Extra ads
or something like that. Yeah. Or like, you know, you can trigger that they're a paid subscriber. And so that way you're saying like, hey, disable ads for the paid person. That makes stuff like that pretty easy.
Oh, that's cool. I need to get more into analytics. I've never really focused on that as much as I should, but I know there's a lot of cool stuff around it. Yesterday, I was talking to our analytics team at work and we changed our continue button from blue to orange. And I think we made like $2 million more on that decision. So I know there's tons of analytics stuff that I need to get better at, like analyzing. I know there's a lot to be done there. So
Wait. Who did $2 million?
Just stop changing the button. I'm doing a contract for a company, 1-800-CONTACTS, and they changed their button color. It made a huge difference.
I could tell you lots of stories about small...
About that kind of stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Lots A-B of
testing. And,
yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there's That's lots cool. of little things you can do. There's people who have worked on projects where they just try to change the font size of an ad by a pixel, and it'll take them a year to do it. And then as soon as it goes through, just lots of money.
Money.
Wow.
That's money. Crazy.
That's the cool thing, though, is with analytics, you get this data sort of just automatically gets brought up, and then you get to go into the console, get to drill into it, get to kind of look at the reports that are, this is all in the Firebase console. And then you, from there, can create specific audiences about that. And mm-hmm. so you can then target to do specific things with those users.
You know, the theme thing that you're talking about, I never would have thought to put a theme in the analytics platform. It's good. Thinking about it, you wouldn't ever want to put anything secure in there, right? Like light mode versus dark mode, that's cool. But you wouldn't want to put any secure info in there, right?
Like, what do you mean secure?
Like visually impaired.
I see what you mean. That, like, well,
it's anything that might be considered
personally identified.
Yeah, personally identifiable data.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you want to be very careful, BII in general.
I just know developers were super smart. And so if you give us a database to put data in, we will always never put bad stuff in there. So I just wanted to call that out. Don't put bad stuff in. Don't put stuff that doesn't belong there.
Should make that into a t-shirt.
Yeah.
The story of my life.
Story of my life. Story of Shai's life.
Yeah.
So Dave, did you build Angular Fire?
Oh man, I wish you had Jeff Gross on this. This would make this so much better. So since Jeff Gross is in here, yes, I am the author of Angular Fire. Well, the second Angular Fire. I was a near contributor to the first Angular Fire, but to the second Angular Fire, I created it. I wrote it. I pioneered it.
Second of his
next. It's really just all mine.
Yeah.
Jeff
didn't help at all.
Not at all.
I hear you guys take credit though.
Yeah. Sounds like Jeff. Classic
Jeff.
He replied to a Slack message. Come on. He was like, yeah, David, this is what you do. He's like, yeah, so, I helped build that.
Back when Jeff worked on the Angular team, Jeff Gross, the I don't know what his position is at Narwhal. He's like
co-founder?
No, isn't he
indifferent.
He's just like the cleaner. I don't know what he's doing.
He brushes the horn on the narwhal.
Cleaner? What the?
He brushes the horn.
It's technically a tooth, so he brushes the teeth.
And his beard.
Yeah,
okay.
And the beard.
But so Jeff worked on the Angular team, and he was like the lead of Angular mobile tools, or I can't remember what it was specifically.
He worked.
And so
air quotes.
One of the things he started doing was building the next version of Angular Fire for, you know, Angular, which we called Angular 2. He was working on it, and then I was helping him out. And then when he left Google and the Angular team, I pretty much took over and rewrote all of the entire library.
That's good.
Is that because he wrote it wrong, or you just felt like it could be better?
So let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Let's really get into this.
Let's open it up. Yeah.
From a serious standpoint, we both wrote it wrong in ways we just didn't realize because it's the first edition of the library.
Yeah, also, I remember you had an object. It was hard to mock or fake. We have an object which had something on it and stuff like that.
We started out by sort of taking this class method approach where you would inject Angular Fire. And then you would call like Angular Fire, where you would configure everything up front in, you know, the app module.
Your app module, yeah.
And then that would give you an Angular Fire instance. And then from Angular Fire, you could call dot database and then dot object. So you could sync an object in real time, or dot list, sync an array in real time. And and then it would be like Angular Fire dot auth. And then you could talk to, you could log users in and do all that stuff. And then that was before Firebase got its relaunch at Google I.O. in 2015, I think. And we went from basically offering three services, which were authentication, real-time database, and hosting to offering about 15 different things. And so when we had to rewrite or start adding in those features, we realized the way we wrote the library wasn't going to scale to that, taking in these amount of features, because everything was Angular Fire dot this, Angular Fire dot that. And then what Webpack would do, actually we were using System.js back then, but when it transferred to Webpack, Webpack was just like, hey, great, I'm just going to suck all this code into your bundle.
Cool, let's just bring it in.
Right.
Yeah,
they're like,
you want all this, right?
Yeah, Webpack's like, are you using auth? You're not? I don't care. It's on the object, so.
Well, I got class, it anyway.
So I'm going to pull it in.
Yep.
Oh, so how hard was that it was starting from scratch, or did you rewrite?
Actually, another thing we did too, which in theory was really cool, but I wasn't very good at RxJS then, so which I'm not sure if I still am now.
Just two promise. You're fine.
Yes, you promise. Basically,
to promise.
What we also did was we wrote a lot of code that didn't really need to exist, but we didn't know any better. So if you would
Jeff.
So let's say you want to get a list of to-dos from the Firestore database. So what you would do is you would say like, okay, create a reference out to to-dos, and then say where the user ID for this to-do equals this user. We created our own abstraction on top of that, which would allow you to take that query as an observable. So think about the query parameters themselves, like the user ID equals this user. the query criteria became an observable. And the fact that everyone is kind of confused thinking about it right now,
I'm not.
Just kind of show that the code was kind of crazy to get that to work.
Frosty's not, but everybody else in the world.
No, you're not.
I know. I'm like, I'm so happy for you, Frosty. I'm glad you're not confused.
Nah, you get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
Frosty
is
amazing.
So we allowed you to send an observable into the observable to get an observable back. Of
not
your
confusing
query.
At all.
This sounds like a Shai Resnick talk.
So we filtered the filter.
You filtered the filter with the map.
I've seen this one. I feel
a talk coming on, yo.
I actually demoed this at ngConf too when we did it. And I remember being like, what if we put an observable inside an observable? And
Dog.
Yeah.
I heard you like observables.
So Ben Lesh actually eventually joined the Angular team and since left. But when he joined, he looked...
the immediate thing he said, you need to add an operator here.
He was like, why are you doing this? And I'm like, well, wouldn't it be really cool if you could trigger query changes with an observable? And he was like, yeah, but all you have to do is... He's like, you're thinking about
start
it opposite.
With.
He's like, you have... He's like, your query changes, like, so let's say you change the user's ID. And so that's an observable of a text box or something like that, some input. And so you get an observable change from that. And he's like, that's the source observable. So you start with that change and then you use that to map into a like reference from Firestore. And then from there, you can pass that in to start a stream. And he's like, so what you did was you're like, hey, I want a stream of to-dos. And here's this other observable that you're going to use to change, you know, the query criteria. But instead he was like, start with the query criteria first.
Use that observable. Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. And then I realized when we started that way, what it ended up doing was, is that it actually caused us to delete all that code and then just let Rx do its thing. So we actually ended up just telling people, hey, if you want to change the query criteria dynamically, start with that and then just map that into your like stream from Firestore.
Thanks, Rx.
Great thing about Angular Fire is that it's this surface area, it's a wrapper around Angular, RxJS, and Firebase.
Firebase.
And so at any time, whenever one of those libraries has like a massive API surface change, which Firebase is probably the most stable out of all three, we do like one big breaking change a year. But when, you know, anytime Angular V whatever comes out, or when we went through the big, you know, pipe operator shift of
RX,
Angular 6, I think,
it causes like massive changes. And so
the pipe operator shift of 2017.
Oh yeah.
That's how it's put in the textbooks. That's
pipe
how it's
gate.
Called.
Yeah. Pipe gate. 2016.
Yeah, that was a huge library change. So when I rewrote the library, we used to just inject one Angular Fire service and then it would do everything. But then while that was easy, it made your bundles really large.
Right.
And so what we switched out to do was we created an ng module
For each
every
service.
So if you just needed auth, there's an ng module for auth. If you just needed Firestore, ng module for Firestore. If you wanted to talk to Firebase Storage, just ng module for that.
If you wanted to be lazy and bring in all of it, could you still do that?
Yeah. You'd have to by hand
import
each
all
one.
Of them. Yeah.
We didn't provide the shotgun import just because we thought that was going like wild.
Give
that
me
would
a
be,
Death Star.
Well, like some people probably would want that and need that, but we just figured that wasn't the majority use case and probably would promote a bad practice if someone just been like, I don't know what I need right now, so I'm just going to include all of it.
I feel like, Brian, we should make a NPM package called Awesome Angular Firebase.
And it just brings, it just wraps everything and brings it all in.
It's just a wrapper.
So, actually,
David's like, I did that last night.
Oh, no, you didn't do that.
So we started to follow a new trend in the library where we dynamically import each feature. So when it goes through the CLI, it'll get code split out.
Okay.
And so that way, if you tried to do that, it actually still wouldn't really do that.
Even if I import it and then export it a second time? If it gets exported, you can't tree shake it.
The features are dynamically imported, so like the import function. We actually import some of the features. We say like from import this. So we actually get an observable of the import. So the cool thing about the library is that it's basically a way to for you to talk to Firebase as your backend and, you know, hey, I want to build a new version of like Meetup or something like that. To do that, you would just you would use Firestore as your database. You would use Firebase Authentication to log in your users. And we have Firebase Hosting for you to pull your apps out to. And with Angular Fire, if you want to do this through an Angular app, we allow you to say, like, okay, let me inject this Angular Fire auth service, and then I can now get an observable of my user's authentication state. Or, hey, let me get an observable of the current list of meetups. And so what we try to do is create these methods that just give you back observables. So your unit tests are easier because you're like, hey, I'm not talking to some special object here. It's just simply an observable. And it fits in really well with Angular because it's just an observable. And so what we've realized is, and one of the things that I find to be the most magical thing about RxJS or just observables in general, is that many things we do in our app are asynchronous. And what's interesting about asynchronous operations is that if you're using like traditional callbacks or promises or something like that, you can see that that code get like crazy indented or like, you know, just comes very confusing to manage. But with RxJS, if I'm starting with one of asynchronous point, I could have 20 asynchronous callbacks or something in between. As a library author, I can just present my user one observable. And so what we've started to do, and we're actually building a library that does this outside of Angular, what we're starting to do is you say like, hey, I want a list of my events or my meetups back from my database. Well, we can actually initialize your Firebase. You actually can download the SDK asynchronously. We can initialize it. We can start that stream. We can do all these things that are like massively asynchronous, and we can just do it through one observable. So on our side, the library author, it can be difficult to make sure that all works properly. But on your side, the user, you're just like, hey, I just got back my to-dos and it all happened lazily. And so it was more performant and it was still just as easy if it wasn't all those things.
That's really cool.
Hey, are you working on a complex enterprise Angular application? Angular Bootcamp is an intensive 3-day workshop class to learn the basics of Angular through sophisticated techniques for real-world applications. They update the class regularly for the most current Angular, and a lot of the curriculum is also relevant to older versions. Or you can go beyond the 3-day class with help from Oasis Digital, the team behind Angular Bootcamp. They can assist your team or launch your project, including scalability, data flow, state management, service architecture, full stack product design, and a ton more. Or you can contact them for a private class at your location or attend public classes in cities around the U.S. and occasionally in Europe. Online live instructor training is also available at angularbootcamp.com.
I have a question. What about Angular Fire and NGRX? Is that something that I haven't seen a lot of articles out there about kind of bringing these two together? Is that something that you've done at all? Or would you not recommend that since Angular Fire already kind of provides a lot of these observable streams? Or what's your thought there?
I did a talk on this probably like a year and a half ago. It was one of our big probably still is, but one of our big questions is how to use NGRX with Angular Fire. And for about a year, I worked on the Firebase console as a front-end engineer.
And that's NGRX behind the hood, isn't it?
Yes, yes. I brought in NGRX to do state management, and since the Firebase console, we're obviously using Firebase. And so I had a real intense lesson of using the two together. And I can tell people what I think they should do because I didn't actually do that specifically.
Okay, perfect.
I did it the wrong way. So I mostly can tell people what not to do. And so the cool thing about using Angular Fire is that it does a lot of really cool stuff for you. The way that Firebase works is actually very similar to Redux. You create a reference out to something and you can almost think about that as like your selector. And so you say like, hey, let me go stream some database, select these to-dos from the database. And then when you want to update it, that reference allows you to call like set, update, remove, delete that. And then that will basically be a dispatch. And that goes out and dispatches. And then you get your real-time sync comes back and is like, hey, this item was removed or this item was updated. And it's very much like, hey, dispatch, reduce, you know, select. And so we've been following that pattern since before Redux was a term. This is all, you know, that whole model's very old, like CQRS and stuff like that. But when you use it together with Redux, it starts to get very confusing because a lot of the same things are happening. There's a massive duplication of responsibility and you're not sure who owns what. Mm-hmm. And so what I realized was, is that, so I would do things where I would duplicate responsibility like crazy. So I would sync data. So your first instinct is to say, okay, I'm going to sync data from this database and I'm going to store it into my store.
Right.
And then I'm going to select from that store. And then when I need to update something, I'm going to run a dispatch. And that's
in NGRX.
And NGRX.
That fires an effect that's going to then hit the Angular fire, right?
Exactly. And then you come back, you know, 2 months later and you're like, gosh, NGRX has all this boilerplate. And like,
we don't use that term on this podcast. Sorry.
How dare you?
How dare you?
Actually, I gave this talk and I gave it meetup in Angular Mountain View, and I probably a couple hours before I rehearsed it in front of Rob Wormald, and he was like, if you say boilerplate like that during the talk, we are not friends anymore. We had this whole thing about boilerplate. But my whole point is that boilerplate a lot of time comes from just not thinking about your scheme or your structure. And I speak from that from total experience. And so what I realized was, is that Firebase is, you know, or Firestore in this case, has a lot of these shared responsibilities. So let it do its own thing and let NGRX do its own thing too. And so, and this is actually where ArcGIS again comes in and saves the day. Let's say I want to read like a list of to-dos for that user in for whatever path I'm on. So what I'll do is actually go to Angular Fire and I'll, you know, from my route or whatever currently logged in user, and I'll just go grab those to-dos. And then when that comes back, I'll know I have this local state that's stored in NGRX. Like, is the menu open? You know, like all this stuff that should not be persisted to a backend. And so that I'll also get back as an observable. So I have an observable of my remote, my backend data, and I have an observable of local data. And that is the state for the page. And so what I actually do is I end up using like a with latest from or combine latest. And then that merges the two together. And that's the single state for the page. And then since the data that's coming from Angular Fire is, you know, is in real time, that still updates.
That's streaming.
Exactly.
Right.
It's all reactive. And me as the user or me as the developer actually don't have to care really if that comes from the back end or if that's because the user is toggling something in the UI. It just all updates as one magical little observable. And then that works out really well because my view is just like, hey, this is just an observable. I don't actually care where it came from. I don't care that it came from NGRX. I don't care that it came from Angular Fire. And so that's sort of the advice I give people. If you're using NGRX and Angular Fire together, that you want Angular Fire to own its own stuff. You want it to just have it return an observable of the state you need. And then with NGRX, it's all the local state. So, and then you just merge them together with one observable. And then that way you're not creating a reducer just to do the same thing that Angular Fire is doing. Angular Fire is already reducing that data for you and then handing it to you. And if you're just creating a reducer method to store it in your store, then that's, you know, because not only are you going to create a reducer, you're also going to create multiple actions for that. You're going to be like, hey, load to-dos. And then you're going to be like, update to-dos, delete to-do, save new to-do, add to-do. And so you get like N amount of actions, N amount of reducers for something that's already being handled for you. So that's why I always say, like, just let Firebase do its thing, let NGRX do its thing, and let RxJS pair them together.
Got it. So there's no advantage of kind of putting that data in the store, even with, you know, selectors being memoized, right? So does that come into play at all here? I mean, because now every time I want those to-dos, I've got to go to Angular Fire and get those? Or is Angular Fire kind of caching that already for me?
Yeah, so Firestore has a local cache that also persists offline. So if you lose network connection, it will continue to work whether you're not connected. So Firestore already has like a very advanced caching
system. It already
has
it in there, right?
The updates that come over the wire, like over the network to Firestore, are all Delta updates. So like if you say, hey, read me all the newest to-dos, even if you called it like six times and it just keeps spinning it out, it's going to spit it out. Yeah, it spits it out from the cache. It's not going to say like, oh, let me just go to the server and just pull the to-dos every time.
I did not know that. I knew it offline, but that's really cool. Okay.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, the way the SDK is written, and you can see this because it's all open source, is that you are actually only getting data back from the cache. So you can think about there's like...
So it's a cache first policy, basically. Yeah.
So the API that you talk to talks to the cache. And so you're getting data back from the cache. And then there's this whole other layer or sync on top of the cache that manages it for you. So when you call like set or add new to do, and then that's going to trigger a real-time update for that to do, that's actually a local event that fires first. And that's called latency compensation. So that happens first, and then it goes through the back end, and then it actually will process it. And then let's say like your security rule. So Firebase has
a rules engine.
Yep. Yeah, declarative rules engine that allows you to say like only users that belong to this group, or only this user, if they own this data, can write to this. So you can secure your data because it's very important. Let's say that violated a rule, we actually allow you to roll that data back. So if it's something bad, like, you know, all happens really fast, so you tend to not see it get updated. But if you went offline and then you made some updates, and then when we sent them back online and we're like, oh, this violated rules,
it'll go and affect the local cache.
Yep. Yeah.
Dang. Man, you guys are good.
Yeah, those are super smart, super smart people working on the SDK.
Wow.
That's pretty great. So I have a question kind of on the topic of the NGRX and the Firebase. So I've read articles about people who they implement, I think they call them Firebase messaging queues. Effectively, kind of what it is it's almost like an action bus, the same way the NGRX, you dispatch actions, right? And you just push them to like a messages collection. And then the other people in the app on other computers kind of get those pushed down to them as well, because they're subscribing to that same reference. So you kind of end up like, you know how the initial Firebase thing was three-way data binding?
Yeah.
You kind of end up with this...
Don't say four-way data binding.
No, not four-way, but you end up with kind of like a star network of actions where actions can come from anybody and everyone gets them, and then can... NGR, you can it's have N-way. Side effects on them. Yeah, it's like N-way, exactly.
That's it's like N-way data.
Oh, man.
Holy cow.
So,
dude. Like,
but I've seen that, and I've actually read articles about it, and I just wanted to get from Sir David what you think about
don't do
Firebase
it.
messaging queues.
I'm pretty sure his face says it all.
To send actions to everyone that's online in your app.
Actually, that's pretty smart. So my only qualm with it is the name, because Firebase messaging is, Firebase cloud messaging is a thing where you can...
So you don't like Firebase messaging queues. You don't like that name.
Yeah, I don't like the name. But the idea is really cool, because you're basically using it as a distributed store and a distributed dispatch. I could see how that could get really crazy, because Redux gets really crazy even just in a little to-do app at times.
What's the use case of this? Like, I mean, I'm kind of following this. Why would you, you've read about this, why are they doing this?
Right. Because you can.
Imagine if like I'm in an app, I need everyone who's online that's like viewing this thing with me to send me, I don't know, Heartbeat, or... I need him to like interact with my user somehow, right? Just maybe to let me know you're still online or something. So imagine if I say, oi, you know, who's here? And so I send out an action, who's phone home, right? I send out the phone home action. And then everybody who gets that, everyone who's subscribed to the messages for our team or whatever, gets that. And so I would then get that, and I would respond to that. I would reduce over it and say, all right. Effect that phones home or sends my heartbeat. And that's just one example. I mean, that's not very practical. I have other use cases where I've needed to do it, but I've also read articles about people that I just wanted to know. NGRX is already, there's like words you can't say without making people mad, like boilerplate. Like, you can't say things to describe it actually. Is this worse? Does doing it three-way or N-way make it even harder?
Well, what you're doing is there's trade-offs with any type of setup or architecture. So in your case, you're giving whoever is on the other side of that, who's ever like listening to those messages, that you're giving them more flexibility and control over what they can do with that. If I understand this right, because I understand the concept, because I've thought about this. I didn't know anyone was actually doing this. it's basically like the raw form of state rather than a computed form of state. So in your case, you would just be like, the phone is home. And everyone would be like, yay, the phone is home. And then the app would only be able to respond to that the phone is like just true. Phone is home or whatever. But in this case, you're actually sending the raw pieces of state. You're even in a lot of cases, you'd be sending in the entire logs, the audit trail of state. I don't know that the phone is home. I actually only get a list of messages. And due to my own computation on my client,
I can derive that the phone is home. Which is almost more important than having a computed calculated separately.
Depends,
yeah.
There's a lot of times where I just want to know the phone is home. And it's a lot faster as far as a read goes to say, hey.
I agree. Hey,
yeah, and cheaper too, because you're basically, it's less data is being stored, less data is being transferred. But it depends on the use case. Like that could be very useful for distributed types of apps.
But if I don't want people to be doing that like all the time and like have, I don't want that in a set interval. Like maybe I only want to do it once a day. And when I do it, I need it to be like instant. So that three-way messaging system is really nice where I'm just like, oi, push messages, respond to messages. It happens one time. I didn't sit there and in a set interval waste a bunch of Firebase data and like throughput and now my bill just went up. So there's times where it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it depends on just what your goal is. It could definitely be really useful. It just depends on like, do I need to know, like it's basically like a TMI style like situation. Do I need to know this amount of information or do I not? Is it just great that I get a true back or do I need to know every single little bit of events that happened to that true?
Yeah. And every situation is going to vary whether on which of those two you need, right?
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Brian, you had another question, I think.
I do have another question. Any chance, and I don't mean to be like offensive here, any chance there's going to be updates to the documentation for Angular Fire? Because right now it's kind of this collection of just like markdown files on GitHub. Is there any plans in the future? Oh, sorry.
It's a very thoughtfully and
well done,
well-structured collection of markdown files on GitHub.
Okay. So I'm just going to stop my question right there then.
There are going to be updates because Angular Fire is getting modules for the analytics and remote config. Uh-huh. The thing I'm really excited about for the analytics update, we do this thing where we check to see if you're using the router. And so like we get like the whatever the ref or whatever gets injected to your app and we're like, hey, are you using the router? Because if you are using the router, we then do the page tracking code for you. So if you've ever implemented a single page app through Google Analytics, you have to send...
Do it all over yourself.
Yeah. You're usually creating some type of interceptor HG or you're creating... you're some middleware where you're saying like, hey, every time someone visits this, there's a route transition that happens, send that event as if it was a holistic... traditional page view. And so with the Angular Fire analytics module, you would just include that in your app module. And then automatically we start sending those events to Google Analytics as if it was a traditional static website.
Nice. But no flashy redesign, angular.io looking, ngrx/arcs.js looking site coming along.
So a lot of my career has been building documentation sites. So I actually, when I, to spoiler a little bit on my Angular story, one of the projects I first started was angular.io. I was one of the original people who worked on that site. I worked on the original firebase.com docs. And so I've written a lot of documentation sites. And so I have a very healthy respect and fear for how difficult it is to maintain one. So GitHub is, while it is not the most impressive and it is not the most flashy and beautiful, it is very effective. It does the job. But for things that are more advanced, what I would recommend to anyone is fireship.io or the Angular Firebase is what it used to be called channel. It's Jeff Delaney, who's Firebase GD. Yeah. He creates just the greatest, just content in general, like just amazing YouTube channel, amazing website. He does a lot of Angular Fire content that, you know, it is seriously amazing.
Yeah, I've come across it a lot and it is very good.
I think there was a point in time where we were like, ah, we really need a website. And then we discovered Jeff's stuff and we're like, oh, no, we don't.
We're good.
We are fine. Jeff, you keep doing your thing.
correct me if I'm wrong, isn't it, don't you have to pay for it or no? I mean, the YouTube videos I know are all free.
The YouTube ones are all free. And he has a lot of free content outside of that as well. But yeah, he does have a paid model, but his YouTube channel alone is...
I've watched several of those.
The paid stuff is really comprehensive courses too. So it's
all called Fireship, you said?
Yeah, fireship.io. And yeah, same thing with the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I'll put the link in the description.
Cool. So no new website. That's what I heard. Bummer.
No, nothing planned. Unless you want to build one for us.
Listen, David is tired of building Doc's website. Okay?
I'm not tired of it. I just, like I
said. It's the classic software engineer. It's like, dude, I build websites all day. Do I have a good website? No, my website sucks.
Because of this Firebase, the documentation should be a real-time to-do or messaging app where I just type in my question and it gives my answer in a to-do
form. With AI on the back end.
Yeah, we're like, because that's, absolutely. I mean, it's Firebase. That's how it should exist. The other thing I think we should call out here is Dave has kind of carried the torch on keeping Firebase up to date, but technically Jeff Cross still owns the documentation, which may be... why it's still just markdown files.
You're saying we need to forward our question to Jeff?
Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm just trying to appropriate where the blame and shame is going and get it back to where it belongs because technically...
I think we're going to need to get Jeff on the show next.
Jeff?
Why?
Jeff Cross still owns the documentation. You heard it here first. It's all
I'm going to get some messages from him.
I know, right?
But they'll be real-time messages, though, so it's good. It'll be real-time. Yeah. Anyway, if Jeff wasn't such a good sport, we couldn't have this kind of fun with him. I know he loves the banter, so it's good. All right, so Dave, thanks for coming on. If there's anyone who wants to reach out and ask you questions about maybe some of the new extension stuff that's coming out or anything coming out with other features with Firebase, what's the best way to contact you?
I am _ David East on Twitter. It's a private variable.
That's true. It's an instance. It's an instance thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But your DMs are open. They're public.
DMs are public. Okay. Better or worse.
Okay. All right. Cool. So everyone reach out to him _ David East.
That was so good.
On the Twitter.
Frosty, you're not laughing. That was funny.
I was about to laugh, but you're laughing so hard. I love that you love it that much is what I love.
Like that was intentional, or did somebody steal the other David East? Tell me the truth, David.
So someone else has the David East, but who hasn't, like, you know, I think they tweeted once that was like, watch an American Idol tonight or something like that. And then there's Dave _ East, and he is a rapper who at one point in time, like LeBron James, like posted like a Snapchat that was like, listening to that new David East album, and my Twitter just like blew up with everyone like, and even nowadays everyone's like, was that the Dave East show last night? Tore it up, man. And I'm always like, the Dave East.
No, why would you say that?
Not the David East.
You should say, thanks for the follow. Stay tuned for more updates. That's all you say, bro.
I'm pretty sure someone's following me and they're like, this guy is a rapper and all he does is talk about...
He's talking about code and skateboarding. That's weird. That's funny. I think you own it, Dave. I was going to say, the guy who owned Aaron Frost on Twitter, he only had it hooked up to like some auto-tweeting bot. So he never actually tweeted. I reached out to him and for like 2 years was like, hey, give me this handle. I'll pay you money, even though that's not cool. And then one day, rent came due. He didn't have the money. And I got a direct message. And guess who owns Aaron Frost now? I'm just saying, Dave.
That is a
great story.
Awesome.
Keep
awesome.
Your dreams up, bro.
Wait, can I just ask how much you paid? Are we talking like rent? Are we talking like $50? No, talking like $100? I mean,
can we say, can I get kicked off of Twitter?
Legally,
here's what happened. I hired him as my employee to do some consulting for me.
Of course.
And for the amount of $500. And as a consultant, one of the things he brought to the table was he brought a Twitter handle.
A Twitter handle.
Yeah. So
very well done.
Technically, that's what the contract we signed said for the amount of $500. Just in case anyone's wondering how to pull that off above the legal table.
That's pretty good rent. I got to say, $500, that's not bad.
This is the most thought I've had about Twitter handle of I'm pretty sure I was like underscore David East. Cool.
That
and
works.
Then went on with my life.
You don't sit there at night pondering your Twitter handle.
How do I get David East?
I would not even pay. Even if someone was like, you can have it, I'd be like, but now everyone's going to think it's the underscore. Just
like 301 redirect people to like your new Twitter handle.
That's true. Anyway. Brian, you're so cool. You know all the codes.
Oh, sorry.
All right. So guys, reach out to Dave underscore David East with questions.
This episode is sponsored by flatfile.io. CSV import is broken. I mean, don't you cringe when you think about how to account for messy data, edge cases, encoding formats, you have that comma or quote in the wrong place, and explaining it to end users, that's just a mess. Building and maintaining a custom importer is a huge time suck and a royal pain. That's why the folks at Flatfile created an elegant import button. Their CSV import integrates into any web app and provides auto column matching, data validation, and an intuitive user experience with just a few lines of code. Flatfile's pre-built SDKs and extensive configuration options make it easier for you to ship the importer you've always wanted. As a listener of this show, you can get a 20% off your first year with the code DEVCHAT. That's capital DEVCHAT. Get it at flatfile.io. Never build a CSV importer again. Boy, wouldn't that be nice.
Does anyone want to start the picks first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
I have a personal pick. I'm picking my wife. I'm very proud of her today. She just found out that she just passed all 4 tests to be a certified fraud examiner.
Hello. So,
yeah,
what kind of fraud?
I guess I probably can't say what.
Not like Twitter handle fraud, right? Like other types of fraud, right?
Like other types of fraud. So she worked at CU Denver, the University of Colorado, for internal audit. And I was on their forensic auditing team. And so you get people that make, poor decisions. Yeah. Whoa. Pretty badass, right?
Yeah, that's cool. Passed all 4 tests.
All 4 tests.
Congrats. Wait, aren't you traveling? Was the test before the traveling?
No. She took the test in the last week while we were traveling.
Wow.
So the good news is she can get rid of the book that she's been dragging around half of Europe for the last 2 months.
Congrats to the Love family. That's cool, man.
So Bonnie's my pick.
That's cool. Congrats, Bonnie. Alyssa, you want to go next?
I know this whole episode is about David, and so maybe it's cheesy, but he is, besides being so incredibly intelligent, he's just got such an amazing heart for like the community, and he's such a kind guy. And I just want to raise him up and say, if you haven't had a chance to go see him talk or hang out with him at a conference or a meetup, you should definitely add it to the calendar, because he alone makes an event worth it. So.
Yeah. He's easily one of the nicest people I've met in the Angular community. Love you, Dave.
I'm going to like soundbite this last part and like went on.
Show it to your boss.
Yeah. Went up for like promotion or something. Like, hey, I didn't pay these people at all.
And yeah, exactly. That's funny. Any other picks, listeners, that we're keeping it wholesome
on,
Dave?
That's it. All right.
I'm going to do a couple picks. There was a talk at RxJS Live. It was by, of course, I'm going to draw a blank on his name right now. What's Ben Lesh's best friend's name? What's his name? You guys know.
Tracy Lee?
No, besides Tracy, sorry. His next best friend besides Tracy, sorry. Anyway.
It's a guy?
Yeah.
Do RxJS stuff?
Everybody know, yes. And he's in React, and he's a super smart guy. He's a GDE. Anyway, I'm drawing a blank. I feel dumb. But during like the closing panel, someone was asking questions, and he said one of his thoughts was, there's a lot of like purists in the RxJS community right now that kind of shame people for doing things like the promise way with observables, or like, you're still learning and so you're doing it the old way. And he feels like there's maybe some shaming going on. And he was like, don't feel stupid for doing those things. Like, we all did them. Like,
we've all been there.
It's totally cool. Even the authors of Rx have learned as we built, like, everyone's learning it, right? So I just wanted to say that, like, it's cool to stop shaming people for, like, doing things. And I really liked, for the way that they're, I really liked that that he pulled that up. I thought that was a really good, Jay Phelps. There you go.
Oh,
I really liked that Jay brought that up and kind of called that out because I think it is a good thing to stop discouraging new people from asking questions by shaming them on the way they're doing it, because it's totally fine. We all did it that way, right? Like, now Brian's a guy I respect, but I'm sure there's a time that Brian wrote things weird, right? With RX. And so, like...
rude?
No, I'm sure there was a time, right? Was there?
No, actually...
There was a time, but...
That's same with Dave. Like, we all did it. And that's all I'm trying to say.
Interesting story there is that at Google, we were a big NG... I still are. The Firebase console is a big NG upgrade app, mix of Angular 2 and Angular. And so I brought in NGRX, and I really wanted to use NGRX effects, but due to some NG upgrade-ness, couldn't use effects at the time. And so what I ended up doing was I would use the tap operator or the dot do back then, and I would package up these functions that would be like, you know, would basically process the effect in the tap. And that's definitely not an RX-y way of doing it, but it worked, and it was much easier.
In a pinch, you do it that way, and it's not effects. I agree. Good. I agree. Yeah. Okay, so my second pick, there's a play. I'm sure a lot of people have seen it. If you haven't seen it, I'm picking it, so you go see it. It's called Miss Saigon. I went and watched it last night. Growing up, I listened to the soundtrack a lot. My parents had seen it. We had pictures of it on the wall. I listened to the soundtrack, but I had never actually watched the play till last night. Legit crying. It's like the only time I've watched like a Broadway and actually got to tears. Like, it was really good story, yo. Like, it was a fantastic. And I was like on the edge of my seat. I was like stressed. I even knew how it was going to end, but I was still like waiting for it, the cliffhanger. Like, I was like, oh, such a good story though. And so I'm going to pick Miss Saigon. If you get a chance to go see it in whatever theater, go see it. It's really, really good play. So those are my two picks.
Cool.
Dave, you wanna throw out some picks?
I didn't know I was doing this, so let me just think about what I'm doing right. Which, by the way, Alyssa, thank you so much for your kind words. I could pick Alyssa for being an inspiring parent, for traveling everywhere with a little child.
With little Milks, Mr. Milks.
Mr.
Milks.
I flew for the second time ever with my kids, and the first time was just like an utter and complete disaster. And the last time it wasn't totally painful, and I felt good about that. So I don't know how you
That's not a badge of honor.
Yeah.
It wasn't totally painful.
A category 4 hurricane is better than a category 5. Like, it's good.
I would say the second time we flew was like a tropical storm, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
Was that when they were like 4 and 7, like recently?
Yeah, that was like 2 weeks ago.
Poor babies.
So I've been listening to a ton of Freakonomics radio podcasts lately, and it's a great podcast just for learning interesting things. But the reason I'd actually say that, if you want to get into like any type of content creation, like public speaking, so giving talks, writing blog posts, doing videos, doing a podcast, I would heavily, heavily recommend listening to literally any Freakonomics radio story, because they do the whole emphasis of each episode is on the story. And they do such a great job of creating a story, crafting it, making it interesting for the entire time. And even if you don't care about the topic, just thinking about the structure of their story will help your content just immensely. And then I'm reading a book called Signal and the Noise by Nate Silver, who runs 538. It's like a really cool data like analysis statistics website on like politics, sports, and all that. But he goes through all these predictions that people had made in real life stuff. So like the financial crisis back in 2008, lost up with baseball. And he goes into what went right, what went wrong. And it's just super interesting. Even if you're not into numbers, I'm horrible at math, but I find it to be just immensely interesting. So yeah, it's a really long book, but it's super interesting.
That's cool. Good picks. Can you share a link in the show notes so we can share it out?
Yeah, I'm a YouTuber, man. Link in description.
There you go. Cool. Dave, thanks for coming. And to everyone listening, we'll say thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
And goodbye. Peace. Forever.
What is that? Are you leaving the show forever?
No, that's like what I say to my friends. It's I'm sorry. It's morbid.
Dude, I think you just got freaked out. Brian and I were like, is Alyssa done with the podcast?
No, I've even got my parents saying it. So like, they'll be like, bye forever. And then they'll leave. Like, and that's how we say goodbye now.
That's rough.
My kids would be in tears.
Say that to your kids next time. Like, right, going to work. Bye forever.
You should just see me trying to go for a 30-minute run. It is like I'm going forever. I said bye forever. Oh, my gosh. It's, my kids will lose it.
It's like one step shy of see if we don't die today. Like, right? it's almost that level.
Hopefully I'll see you again.
Don't die today.
Sensitizing,
see,
you know, it's desensitizing your friends. That way, when you do die, they're not shocked, right?
You like, definitely shouldn't be a gate attendant. So, if someone's getting on a plane, you're like, goodbye forever. Yeah.
Have fun. Hopefully, the plane doesn't crash. See ya.
Oh, you should just try it, like with your spouse.
Your carry-on's too big. Don't die.
Just try it and see what they do. Because, like, whenever I first did it to Zach, he just started laughing. So it's funny.
You're on the road with Davies and his kids. Don't die. Have fun.
Yeah. Bye forever. See you, maybe never.
All right. Officially, I'm ending the show then. Thanks for coming. See you next time. Adventures in Angular is a devchat.tv production made in partnership with Hero Devs. Hero Devs is a group of Angular experts who can help your team code like true developer heroes. If your team needs an Angular expert, reach out to Aaron at hero.dev today.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit cachefly.com to learn more.